right. Episode number, let me look it up. Actually, I think it's number 9. We broke one up into 2. I gotta check myself, right? Episode number 9, look at that.
I don't have to fact check you yet.
Yeah, perfect. Good. All right, here we go. I have with me Sam and his wife, Elise. They both have some hardware. They wore their medals here. So Sam and Elise Willoughby, pro BMX. Are you guys pro or I don't know how it works?
Yeah. Pro, that, you can go either way.
I guess, because I'm just seeing the Olympics. Yeah, pro. The Olympics. It kind of throws me.
Started out as kids on bikes and then eventually became a job.
No big deal.
Yeah.
I think that's everyone's goal and everyone's dream, right?
Career bike riders. There we go.
I would have loved to have been that. I feel like BMX biking was way, it was definitely bigger in our time. Yeah. Or my time, growing up. Like
80s, 90s, it was.
Yeah.
It was going really well.
That was
started
what I did.
In Southern California.
Oh, yeah. It did.
75, I think. 74.
Yeah.
I had a VFR.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah.
I mean,
nice.
It was chrome. It wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, it was even when we started late 90s. Well, obviously I was in Australia.
Yeah.
It was the participation was really high.
Right.
And it seems like it's getting back there a bit now, which is good to see.
Yeah.
This year's actually, kids back on bikes.
Yeah,
it was cool.
The whole shutdown thing, bikes have been selling like crazy, and you actually see, we take the dog for a walk and you see kids riding bikes again. It's good.
It's crazy. I know. Yeah. I agree. Since the pandemic has kicked off, I've never seen so many people walking around my neighborhood and or doing things like that. And it's awesome. It's great to see because that's how we grew up. I literally would leave in the morning and, be like, Mom, I'll be back at dark.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And we were on our bikes and we were off and we were doing, bad stuff probably. Getting in trouble.
There's all those memes where it's like, this is how you used to find your friends with 4 phones and it's all the bikes laying in front of somebody's house. Things have changed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know. All right, so tell the people a little bit about your guys' self. So give them a little bit of background.
Yeah, so, I grew up in Australia and just, rode bikes for fun and eventually started racing with my brother at around age 6 and played Aussie rules footy and just was very active, really fond memories of my childhood.
Yeah.
Growing up at home with my brother and neighborhood kids and always on bikes, always doing something. And
destroying his parents' backyard.
Yeah, we dug up the backyard, made a BMX track. And pretty much from when I was about 8 years old, it was my dream to come to America and race BMX professionally. So I decided pretty young. I remember telling Mom at age 8, flicking through a magazine and seeing pictures of the American racing, and it just looked bigger and brighter and better. And I was like, I want to go to America and race. And that's going to... I told her that night, actually, I'm not getting a job. I'm going to America to race BMX. And she probably just rolled her eyes. But
your pa told you proved him wrong.
Yeah, my grandpa tells me every time I talk to him because he used to pick me up from school and he's, what are you going to do for work, Sam? He's a hard worker and owned a transport business. And
okay.
Very much by age 14, he was like, you guys need to get jobs. And I was like, I'm going to race BMX. And he was like, that's not a job, Sam.
Proved you wrong.
Yeah. And, yeah, so then at age 17, I moved over here to chase the dream, so to speak. And, I mean, a lot of stuff in between that with meeting Elise and,
Won a silver medal, a couple world championships. Don't leave those little details out. It's not like you're just a guy who...
He's a GOAT contender, yeah, we'll say it.
Right, yeah. I mean, I had obviously, the story of how I met Sam and Elise is actually kind of funny. And then I had to do my own research on you guys, and I was like, okay, who are, Elise comes over here. She's like, well, my husband's in a wheelchair. He's in the car. He can't help move this huge piece of equipment. I was like, okay. She's like, he's not a bum. I'm like, no.
Don't tell them that. I'm like, tell them I can't help. I'm not just lazy.
Well, we pulled up and you and a few of your mates were there and all strong looking dudes. I'm sitting in the driver's seat and I'm like, Tell them that I'm in a wheelchair. They're going to be like, what is wrong with this douchebag? Sitting in his car watching his wife try to move this piece of equipment. And we didn't even have my chair with me, so I couldn't have even got out.
Right. They got out in your wheelchair and showed it. It was like, yeah, this guy's just in his car. He's in his car. He's going to make his work.
Get your dumb gym equipment. Let's go.
Right. So that was actually really funny. At least comes in. She's wearing an Olympic t-shirt, know, and looking fit. I'm like, okay, like, or, I'm like, what do you do? And she's like, oh, you know, I'm just in the Olympics. No big deal. On the Olympic bike team. Oh, I'm like, okay. So, and then, yeah, go back and,
I had no idea we were going to meet either because I met through somebody else.
Yeah.
I
was selling a piece of equipment, gym equipment on through somebody else, just helping me out. Not so for no reason other than, you know, just being careful. You
don't want the whole San Diego community show up.
Right. And so, you know, Sam and Elise come over and it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, is this kind of cool? I'm like, hey, nobody really it was a West Side belt squat. I was getting rid of it. It was too big for my garage and I wanted something else. And so we put it out there and it's not a normal piece of equipment, gym equipment that normal people are like, oh, I really want a belt squat for my house, you know? And so it was just, I'm like, what do you do?
Why do you want this?
Why do you want this piece of equipment?
Why do they have it? Funny meeting.
Yeah, really funny story. So I go back and I have to do my Googling. I'm reading about Sam. He's like one of the greatest BMX bikers of all time. And then Elise obviously won a silver medal in the Olympics as well. And going for another, you know.
Yeah, trying to go for one better with Sam's help coaching me now. So,
no big deal.
Come full circle, yeah. I guess.
We've got an extra year off our sleeves now.
Yeah. Exactly. Within how's that been?
Yeah, it's been, it's interesting. You know, we were ready for a big year. Obviously, 2020 is shaping up. We started the year down in Australia with some World Cups, and we were meant to host the World Championships in the U.S.
Okay.
In May, and then that would be our last race before Tokyo. And so it was just shaping up to be a really good year, liked where we were racing and competing. And then, obviously, everything just came to a quick halt after it started a really good year. And it's tough. It doesn't change anything. You still train, you're still working hard. But I guess just the adrenaline of everything and getting so geared up and ready to go. We work in these four-year cycles, you know. Right. So you've been planning. You're in that last – you've started that last phase of training for the big show. And it's like, okay, are we going to have an Olympics really? You don't know. They ended up moving it a year.
Yeah.
But at first it was very unknown, what's going to happen. And I think even still to date, there's still some question about what could happen. But learn to kind of just enjoy the quiet time. And we never really get a chance to just be at home in the routine without traveling and competing. So just trying to make the most of it. And once you got over that first swallowing, okay, it's changing. It's been good. We've enjoyed being home, routine, and just, I guess, trying to make it better than it was. Do things you couldn't do.
Right.
Make most of the opportunity, even though it's obviously not what you hope for. But, make the most of it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's been a crazy year for everyone. Yeah. Right?
Exactly.
And I couldn't imagine having a four-year workup and then literally, what was it, 3 months, 2 months prior to?
It was 4 months.
So it was in March this whole... Well, yeah, when they made the call, it was probably May.
Yeah.
So, basically 2 to 3 months before she was supposed to race, yeah.
I couldn't imagine having working up to something that you've been training for 4 years and then, 3 months out, being like...
Yeah.
Nah, we're just kidding. We're going to push it back another year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what's hard. It's not like it really changed, what you want to do.
Right.
But it's a tough thing to swallow that, okay.
Are they doing anything different for the qualifiers? Do you have to re-qualify or anything like that?
That's still all changing for everybody. And that's where, for me, I'm kind of in a pretty good position because I've done well leading into all of this, so... I'm pretty solid, but I'm still not guaranteed anything because the qualifying's still ongoing technically.
Gotcha.
So it's a little up in the air, but I'm in a good position, whereas I really don't envy all the people that maybe with the trials events or, you know, just maybe aren't as sure about their spot within the team. I think it's really hard for people in that position.
Man.
And the people choosing.
Yeah.
So
nuts.
Yeah, selection.
Well, I'm excited to watch you now. That's for sure. You know,
it's gonna be good.
I'm excited. I think I've watched the BMX a little bit. I watch all sports.
Yeah,
I love sports. In
general. We're the same. Yeah.
And so, you know, but I don't think I've ever really watched too much BMXing. But I grew up being on bikes and stuff like that. But
it's changed a lot in the last sort of 10, 20 years really since it became an Olympic discipline and just. the whole framework of the sport, you know, like dropping off of a big start hill now. And it's a professional sport like any other. And
when did it become an Olympic sport?
2008 was the first year.
First year. Okay. Yeah. Nice.
So we were both too young that year because you had to be 19. We were 18.
We were 17.
17. Yeah.
Wow.
So.
And how long have you guys known each other? Or when did you guys meet?
That year.
2008.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, say let's okay.
Let's hear the story. Yeah, let's hear the story. The
story that he's always jokes. I'd probably fact check him because it'll forever be the argument about how we actually.
I was like a creepy fan of Elise.
That would be messages. So when he said he read those magazines and wanted to come race in America, you know, yeah. I'm one of those American kids in the magazine. You know? Okay. So he's chosen that.
Like messaging her on MySpace and stuff.
MySpace. Now we're dating ourselves. Yeah. Okay, yeah. MySpace.
And so my version of the story is I was messaging her since like 2005 probably, and just like fan, and thought she was hot and whatever else you do when you're 15.
Right.
And then in 2008 the world championships were in China, and it was both our first years as junior elite. So
okay.
That's like the category before you turn professional sort of thing.
Gotcha.
And we were happened to be like the USA team and the Australian team were in the same hotel, and no one really knew who I was at that point. And I ended up winning that race, won the world championship.
Okay.
So my version of the story is I became good enough for her to talk to.
but the MySpace message, we have a ongoing debate about a comma. So when.
Because it's like tradition to swap jerseys in BMX, like okay. with other countries and stuff. So. Yeah. We,
back in 2006, we'd had a mutual friend because I wanted an Australian jersey. He wanted an American one. A mutual friend was like, hey, I know somebody. Like, you can swap. So that was really when we first met was in 2006, but never swapped jerseys that year. But then in 2008, I said that I want a piece of the jersey, comma, champ. And he thinks I want a piece of the jersey, champ.
She wanted a piece of the chat.
No. Commas are critical in this argument.
Punctuation.
Yeah.
And we call it punctuation.
We can't get back into our MySpaces.
No, we can't remember our password.
Right. Right. Is that even... I wonder if they're even still like... You can still actually...
The website comes up, but we can't get in.
Like we're telling our people around us, oh, this was Elise's MySpace song. You know? And they're like, what are you talking about?
Oh, that is amazing.
So anyway, that's how we met in 2008.
Okay.
And then it was kind of coincidence that year was, like I was 17. Yeah, turning 17. And basically, I won the world championship and then kind of told mum and dad, like, I want to go to America now. And they're like, all right, we'll save up enough money and get a plane ticket. And I think they thought I was kind of going to do a race and would come home, and ended up coming over here and won a race and then got a sponsor and been here.
And somehow ever since. In that we kept in touch from China, obviously, where we met, and he was coming over a few months later. So somehow I convinced my parents to let a 17-year-old boy come to Minnesota and to train.
I was like living at their house.
No, I'm just gonna ask, like, where did you live when you
first came
here?
She was going
to
high school. I'd be at home with her mom.
Oh, what a story. Amazing.
You started in California.
I was kind of just just house to house. And
just off of people like other riders?
Plan, yeah, the plan was I came in end of September, and there was three races between sort of through October and then the last one, the end of November.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan was end of November I go home, and that was kind of like my American stint.
Okay.
And it ended up going well. I won the race in November, which is like the biggest race of the year here.
Yeah.
And I guess caught the eye of the industry a bit, and ended up getting a sponsor, and then
came back a few months later.
So I went home for Christmas and come back and never left.
Yeah, no big deal.
Sorry, Mom. Mom, I should say.
So, yeah. Oh, that's awesome, man. So going into a sport like BMX, like I don't know anything, like as a kid, or what, before it was an Olympic sport, there were still like worlds and stuff like that. So it just wasn't in the Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like world championship, national championship, state championship, district champions, all those little
The UCI World Championships, which the UCI recognizes, you know, like tour all the cycling disciplines.
Yeah,
so it was under that as well.
But like for me, growing up in Australia, the dream was to win the USA BMX Pro title.
Okay.
So it's basically a series that runs over here with USA BMX from January through to the last weekend in November, which is like the grands. That's like the big race, and you accumulate points, and then the last race is double points, and that's like, as a BMX kid growing up, that was like the most, that's like the prestigious thing that you want to win. So
that's where it started.
That's where it
started.
Like
BMX racing, original sanctions.
So that was like, for me as a kid, it was never about Olympics. Like I loved the Olympics, but BMX wasn't in the Olympics.
Right. Yeah.
Football wasn't in the Olympics, which was my other sport I loved. And so it was just about, I wanted to be USA BMX champion.
So, but you played Australian football.
Yeah, Australian
football. Not soccer. Not football.
Exactly.
Which is like kind of rugby, kind of football-ish. Yeah, I don't know.
The rules are much the same. They're kind of this, kind of that.
I don't know how to explain it.
I played rugby for a few years. I love rugby. I think rugby is a phenomenal sport. But I remember watching when I was getting into rugby, watching a lot of the Australian football too.
Yeah.
Because it was similar. It was just a little, still a little different though.
Yeah.
And I didn't even understand rugby as I played it.
Okay.
I remember people being like, kick for touch. I'm like, what the fuck? What is touch? Yeah. You know, they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, out of bounds?
I tried. I made it.
Yeah. I didn't try.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that's awesome. And so what, like, I guess, when did you decide, like, hey, BMX is it?
Pretty early. Like I said that thing to my mom when I was 8.
Yeah.
And then probably around 15, I was like, I need to get to America and have a go at this thing. And it was just, it was really just my dream to not, like, I knew it wasn't a sport where you're going to make millions of dollars or anything like that.
Right.
But it was like, I just didn't want to work a real job, to be honest. Like,
right.
I just wanted to do something I was really competitive.
Yeah.
And I loved the individual aspect of BMX.
Okay.
So that's probably what drew me away from footy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just driven to, like, I just want to be able to, you know, buy a house, get a head start on life. And whilst doing something that I'm passionate about, that I can compete at and try to beat the guy next to me every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it, man. That's awesome. How about, like, did you ever do any of the freestyle stuff? Like where you're doing like flips?
No, I never got into it at all.
Just the racing.
Yeah, just race. For me, it was just competition.
Like, yeah.
I just wanted to be race next to someone. Like, beat someone.
And beat someone. Exactly. I get it.
And I didn't want that in like a judge's hands or anything. I just wanted it to be like first guy across the line.
Right. It's easy. Yeah. It's subjective and not subjective.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think subjective sports are cool. I can, like, you know, like, well, now with, you know, the, X Games and all that kind of stuff. You know, they're fun to watch.
Yeah,
exactly. But you're right. It's not a freaking, hey, he scored more points than we, or they scored more points than we did, or he pinned him, or, you know, like it's straight up objective.
Yeah.
Like get across the
and
line.
And I think the thing, like when you get into sport, it's like, it can seem like the 100 meter sprint, for example, it's like the gun goes off, first guy across the line. It seems so simple, but when you, the more and more you go into it, it's like you can just break it down so much. And I think I still am addicted to that. That's why I coach, of just that, like trying to find these edges that you can't even justify, or you really don't even know what you're searching for half the time.
Right.
You just have this vision in your head and
I can make it better.
Yeah, I can make it better. And,
right.
And the thrill of trial and error. And
You're looking for 1%.
Exactly.
When you're at the elite level, like you guys are, you know, winning world titles and Olympic medals, all you're looking to do is be 1% better than those people, because exactly those you're in a different class.
Yeah.
Right. And exactly now you're fine tuning.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's crazy.
And you can go down the wrong rabbit hole and then you try to come out and find a better way. And it's just a never ending process. And
it really is. It's trial and error.
And once you raise the bar, then everyone else raises the bar and you got to raise it again.
Yeah.
And it's like,
It just gets crazier and crazier.
Yeah.
And, you know, pushing the human body. And then you're looking for recovery tools.
Yep.
You know, and how can I recover faster so I can train more? And if I can train more, I'm going to be better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the mindset. No, I agree, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And how is it coaching your wife?
Your
wife. Not coaching your wife.
It's, yeah. It sounds worse than it is. Like, we have a really good, I mean, we trained together for so many years, or it's kind of doing around each other. So,
right.
And she's obviously a very talented athlete. So it's that side of it helps. And I'm just really passionate about the, you know, the process of it all. Like, I just love it. And, I'm very competitive. I love competition, like I've said. And then after my injury, it was like, I just needed something to fuel that. I needed something to fuel my competitive side.
And right.
The coaching is, fortunately, I guess I happen to have some skills in that area, and she's really good. So it's just a fun combo. And I think we're both, it was new. It almost like revived, I think, her career in a sense. Yeah. 'Cause I mean, it was after my accident, I think it caught a lot of people off guard. Like, there'd never really been an accident like that in our sport.
Oh, and just
really?
To recap, like, we didn't even talk about it.
This was going to be a good segue into that. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, like, there'd never really been an accident of that magnitude in our sport, like, not at the top level anyway.
Right.
So I was kind of at the top of my career and then had that accident. I think it caught a lot of people off guard. And obviously, Elise had been through a lot with a lot of different injuries and losing her mum to cancer a few years prior. And just, she'd been through a lot, and then my injury on top of that. And it was, I think she was at a point where she was like, is this worth it? Like,
right.
Didn't. And then I think it was like one day in the hospital, we were kind of just laying there, and she was like, it just doesn't seem important anymore. Like, it doesn't, racing BMX, like, what does that mean anymore? Like, here we are, you know, you're paralyzed in a bed, and like, what, for what? Like, and instantly that just clicked with me. I was like, no, like, this is important. Like, you're good at it. You're passionate about it. Like, we need, as humans, I think we need an outlet to express ourselves. And I needed something as well. Like, I still need an outlet to express myself and challenge myself intellectually, competitively, all those things. And so, yeah, I think that day it was like, all right, let's just do it together. Like, I'll train you. You go in.
And it was interesting, like, because we were packed up after his injury, and we were living in like Denver area at the hospital there. And so, I mean, I'm sleeping at the hospital, and like training is, you know, by the wayside. You know,
right,
like,
of course.
And like my prior coach at the time, like we'd done the Olympics. Sam's accident happened 3-4 weeks after. So I hadn't really been training or anything since the Olympics, and so then we were in hospitals. And so I think trying to have someone else help you that's not in that scenario, that's not going to understand what your day-to-day really is, wasn't going to work anyway. So it was such a natural thing to have Sam, who's there, sees what I even have any time, access, or capability to do. Like, that was a natural segue.
Right.
And so we were able to make the most out of what, honestly, little I really did.
Yeah.
I didn't do much, but got ready, and then having success at the race in the end of November, it was like, okay, we can do this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a natural transition, I think.
And I think for me, like, after my injury, like, it just clicked with me right away, like, the thing I never missed, like, riding BMX from the get-go. I think because my injury was pretty severe and
right.
You face so many other emotions, and you lose so much more than just being able to ride the bike. Like, that was the least of my worries at that point.
Yeah.
But the thing that clicked with me right away was like what I liked about BMX, and it was just competition. Mm-hmm. And so then that was like, I was just ready to get back on the horse like right away. I was like, I need some, like, obviously I was competing with my body to try to get better, but a lot of that in many ways was out of my control at that point. And my biggest, a lot of my concern was like Elise. I mean, we were 25 and going through this life-changing thing, and like she needed an outlet as well. And I needed to make sure that she knew it was okay to express that outlet, that it wasn't like, because I think originally she felt a bit like, how can I go and do this after it's taken that from you? And I was like, nah, I didn't, like, that just happened. Like, it wasn't. Yeah. Like, BMX didn't take
like
that from me.
It was a weird jealousy feeling. You don't want to like rub it in almost. Like, look what I can go do, and you can't. It took this from you.
Right.
But it just felt weird.
Yeah. I think she, but I never looked at it like that.
let's go into the injury. I'd be like, yeah, like we're talking so much about it now. It's like around it. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, it's like people are gonna be like, well, what injury is it? Yeah. Right? Like, what are we talking about here?
I broke my hand.
Yeah. I stubbed my finger and I just didn't want to ride anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 4 weeks after the Olympics in Rio, I was 2016. Yeah. Just a training day out at our local track in Chula Vista. And was doing a routine warm-up and going through what we call a rhythm section, a bunch of little jumps in a row. And part of my warm-up was always, like, I'd go through on my back wheel, and that was, like, signified to me, like, I was balanced and felt good on the bike and ready to go, and just did this warm-up literally every session for 6 years, and just overcorrected and ended up flipping off the back of my bike and went up into the air, basically into half a backflip, and came down on top of my head and broke my neck at C5-6-7. And I remember, like, when the accident was happening, like, I remember everything. Thankfully I didn't get a concussion or any head injuries, but also I remember everything.
Yeah.
I remember going off the jump and was like starting to flip and thinking, like, I've been here a million times. Like, it's not unusual to flip off the back of your bike. Like, growing up as a kid, it was a every week occurrence, you know, we call it looping out. And I remember being in that position just thinking, all right, this is going to hurt. I'm going to be winded. And by the time I came to after hitting the ground, I realized I wasn't winded. Like, I fully had my breath, and that didn't really register with me. And then the next memory or thought that I had was, like, I can't feel my legs, and I just felt like my legs were, like, way off in the distance. And there was
none of it was like blacked out. It's just like shock.
I'm sure, like, all this would have happened in seconds, but it's obviously going slower in your mind.
Yeah.
Another rider came up. It was like a local practice day at the track. Another rider came up, and she was, I just remember screaming, like, I can't feel my legs, can't feel my legs. And she then just called for help, and some parents and stuff come down. And I didn't really know anything about spinal cord injury at that point. I obviously knew of, like, people being paralyzed and that kind of thing. I'd been around it with friends in motocross, but didn't really know the details of it and, you know, how it happens or and so I didn't know I'd broken my neck. I didn't know I'd broken my back. I didn't really have any pain. And so I just laid still, and eventually some parents come down, and luckily one of them was an EMT, and he was very good at stabilizing me and kept me very still. And he started running through all these checks, like, started at my feet, and he was kind of tapping up my body, like, can you move your feet? No. And tapping up my legs, can you feel this? No. And I remember he got his hand to my chest, and I could see his hand, like, right there on my chest. And he was like, can you feel this? And I was like, no. But I could see his hand was, like, right there, just below my chin, but it felt like he was touching, like, a meter away from my chest. Like, my best way I can describe it is felt like I was in a wetsuit full of water.
I got you, okay.
And so he started running these checks down my arms then, and the first time he got to my hands, like, I really gingerly, like, squeezed his hand. And then he went back down, did the check again. The second time he came back up and he did my hands, and I couldn't squeeze his hand. And at that point, yeah, basically the lights were out from my neck down. And I'd say that's when, like, yeah, real panic sort of set in for me. At that point, I was, just motionless on the BMX track and waited for paramedics to arrive. And when they got there, they didn't really say much. Like, they knew the magnitude of the injury, and it was just kind of strapped me on a backboard, and they put me in the back of an ambulance, and I remember hearing them talking, and you know, they were like, it's too bumpy to drive out of here, like, it's too risky. So they called for a life flight, and when I was laying in the back of the ambulance waiting for the helicopter to arrive, they held a phone up to my ear, and that was Elise, because at the time Elise was in Minnesota doing a charity event after her success in Rio, which I was supposed to do with her. And my Rio adventure didn't go so well. And I was just, it was probably my biggest disappointment of my career at that point. Like, I went into Rio, really good shape, and won every race all day, got to the final top qualifier, was got to the bottom of the start hill in first and made a mistake on the first jump and ended up finishing sixth or something. And that was a tough pill to swallow, and it was something that I kind of just, immediately and after the race, I just covered it up as best I could, because Elise had just won a silver medal, and try to go and celebrate with her and just like suck it up. And but then after that, I just didn't deal with it well. It was like my mentality was, I just need to go to the next race and win, make up for Rio. And I just kind of like buried my head in the sand, like started going to every race. Like, I was at a race 3 weeks after the Olympic Games trying to win.
And the exact same mistake.
Yeah. So and just... I made the same mistake again. Just trying, like, it was just a point in my career. Like, that was the one thing that I hadn't got. And it seems selfish to even say that. Like, oh, I haven't got a gold medal. Like, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, just silver in London. But
I get it. I get, you know, when you're a competitor, a silver medal, I took second at the 2011 CrossFit Games. And I remember sitting in the back and thinking in my head, like, I want to take this medal and I want to throw it in the trash can because I'm a loser. And that obviously, looking back on it, like, wow, how stupid are you? Like, you know, you just took second. You accomplished something.
Yep.
But it wasn't the goal that you
wanted.
It wasn't the goal you set out for.
And that's how it feels when you're in a race. And we both talk about that moment of crossing the line. And, you know, it's almost like, you're chomping at the bit, like, I almost had it and you want more. But then, you know, you go on the podium, you start realizing the magnitude of things, but it's tough to swallow that. Like,
even
though it's an accomplishment. Like
exactly. Yeah. It takes time as an athlete to understand that, because when you're young and hungry and like you're out there to win, that's it, you know, and second place isn't winning.
Right.
And
at that point, like I'd been fortunate enough to go through my whole career. I had no injuries, like never broke a bone, anything. And in 2016, I tore my ACL, like, 5 weeks before the Olympic Games. Oh, sorry, 5 months before the Olympic Games.
Oh, wow.
And
this is 2012?
2016.
Oh, 2016, okay.
And fortunately, I could just, obviously, I didn't have time to get surgery, but cycling being, you know, there's no lateral movement, really. I was able to put a brace on and just race. And it really didn't affect me at all on the bike. Like, I was in great physical shape. And but after the race, it was like, you know, I failed. I knew my knee needed to be repaired. I was 25 and it was like contracts, everything was up. And it was like, I was just in probably a bad place mentally, and I'm not a good loser at the best of times. And just, I was just like, my mentality was kind of just like a gambler. Like, I just, going to fix this loss by winning the next one.
Right. I mean, I think the greatest, the greats at anything aren't good losers.
No.
Right? You know, because I think that's what makes them great. Yeah. 9 times out of 10 is because they hate losing so
much.
Exactly. Yeah. And having an ACL, it's crazy to hear that, right? You know, that you don't have an ACL, you know, and you're still doing really well. You still went to the Olympic Games and took sixth.
Yeah.
Without an ACL.
He was definitely the favorite and best shape he's ever been. I think that's what hurt too. He was probably, because of that, you took your training to another level as far as looking at the details and how to make things better and work with what you had.
Right. And you gained a lot of knowledge now as a coach, you know?
Yeah, I think like my stubbornness when I was an athlete helps me a lot now with coaching, because at times I did a lot of things my own way, which wasn't good at times, you know, and I was very like bull at the gate and like my way or the highway. But I learned a lot, and it's given me a wealth of knowledge now and an understanding and of how to relate to different people. And with Elisa's stuff, just being able to understand, you know, the process of things and be able to look at things objectively. And because a lot of that, I did a lot of trial and error, and it probably cost me a lot of success at times. But and ultimately, I think that was probably, you know, the thing that made me great throughout my whole career is ultimately the thing that took me out.
Right.
But I'm okay with that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's awesome to hear. You know, you're sitting there telling me, you know, you don't even miss BMX biking, you know, and you were at the top of your game when you got injured.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a hard thing to swallow. I remember, you know, in 2011, so I was, you know, I took second, and then the next year I dislocated my knee completely. So I tore my ACL, PCL, MCL,
yeah,
and meniscus. And yeah, I just remember being like, you know, I'm not done. I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not, it's not over for me.
Yep.
It could be worse, you know, so, yeah, it's, you know, and now you're finding your, you know, next step with helping others.
So I guess, back to the injury, but that's, ultimately I think what led to the accident in some respects of just, you know, I was mentally, physically burnt and probably should have been resting somewhere, but I
should have got the ACL fixed.
Yeah, probably should have been getting anyway.
You got three other ligaments.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I guess that then I was, yeah, anyway, I think I was saying that at that point I was in the back of the ambulance and they held the phone up and that was Elise. And I just remember just at that point just feeling, yeah, a lot of guilt at that point, really, just because I felt I didn't know what my injury was at that point, but I knew it wasn't good.
Right.
And the furthest thing from my mind at that point was BMX, but the first thing on my mind was like, Elise just got a phone call that I'm paralyzed. My mom, dad in Australia, and my brother just got a phone call saying Sam's paralyzed, and I knew that they were going to, you know, move heaven and hell to be on the next flight and be over here, and then they were going to have to sit on a plane for 20 hours just knowing that I'm paralyzed.
Right.
And I just felt a lot of guilt because I just felt that I'd let myself kind of get to that point, and then now we were all going to have to deal with it. And so then that was the next point for me was the helicopter flight to Hillcrest. What is it? Scripps.
Oh, Scripps Ranch. Yeah.
Scripps Massey. And,
2 weeks there.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, just being rushed through the hospital ward there on a stretcher thing, and still not really having any understanding of what my injury was. And at that point, even if I wanted to try to move stuff, I was just strapped to a backboard, like there was no chance of moving anything. And
and no family or support to help you through any of it.
It was just me at a hospital. And I remember we were racing through the ward, and there was a female nurse that was there, and she obviously knew the magnitude of my injury, and she put her hand on mine as we were kind of racing through the ward, and she had a tear in her eye, and I said, "Am I dying?" And she said, "We don't know yet. We don't know the magnitude of your injury yet. You've sustained a severe neck injury, and we need to get you stabilized as soon as possible." And whether or not that was like an exaggeration at the time, like when you don't get that, when you're strapped to a backboard motionless and you don't get a yes or no answer to that question, it's it's pretty daunting time. And so then the next bit, I was shoved into MRI machine and went through all of that, pulled out, put into behind a little curtain, and just laying there motionless by myself and still no idea what my injury was. And eventually a surgeon came around, and he didn't really introduce himself or anything. He just said, "Close your eyes." And he said, "What am I doing?" And I said, "You're squeezing my right big toe." And he said, "Okay, we need to go now." And I was like, "Go where?" He's like, "You've broken your neck at C5-6-7. C6 is a burst fracture. It's crushing your spinal cord. And if we don't relieve that pressure now, your chances of recovery are zero." And at that point, like, I'd never even been under the knife, like no surgeries or anything.
Yeah.
And my initial thought was like, well, I need to like convey with some people. Like,
I need to talk to somebody. Like, hold on, doc. You know, like, you're about to do some crazy shit. I need to talk to somebody.
Really weird like, now thinking back, it's like, it's just a weird headspace I was in, like laying there. I just had no idea.
And what's so crazy is that the fact that this injury was so severe, but you're so aware.
So aware and no pain. Like,
right.
And I just...
And the fact that you asked him, "Do you know what you're doing?"
Yeah, then he's like, "Yeah, we need to go now." And then my next question was like, "Do you know..." Oh, I said, "What's the risk?" And he said, "Well, you know, we're going to go and pull these bone fragments out of your spinal cord. And if we hit any higher than C6, like, then your condition could be permanent. If we do more damage, your condition could be permanent." And at this point, I'm thinking, like, I'm definitely going to recover. Like, this is a bad injury, but I'm definitely going to recover.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like, well, do you know what you're doing?
And he's like, what's your name again? Let me see your credentials, bro.
And he's like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. We need to go now. And then we just went to surgery. And it's like,
man, that's with nobody there. No, like, you're still in Minnesota.
I was probably on a plane.
Yeah. I hadn't spoken to my parents.
Nothing. And so they're going to, you're literally going under a knife and you have, like, you know, you're going to wake up and.
I thought I was going to surgery to get better. Like, I was going to wake up from surgery and they're going to be like, it went great. Like, it's going to be 6 months.
Yeah. Like, be back on the bike,
it's
man.
It's so naive to think like that now. Like, yeah, but right. That's right. What I thought. And I woke up from surgery and he's like, it went great. And I was like, I'm still paralyzed. Like, that was my first thought. It was like, I'm still paralyzed. Like, so it was a 6-hour surgery. They went through the front of my neck and fused me from C5 to 7. And by the time I'd woke up from the anesthesia and stuff, Elise was there at that point. And I remember when I sort of came to by that, like, she was next to me holding my hand. And the first thing I said to her was, you're not marrying me, you're not marrying a vegetable.
Because we were engaged.
We were engaged to be married in April. Yeah, this was September. And yeah, it was just coming out of that surgery was when it kind of just really, that was the first time someone used the term permanent paralysis to us. And I remember just crying and just telling her that you're not marrying me. And I didn't know how to deal with that situation at that point. I had no idea what lied ahead.
Right. And I mean, I don't think anybody does, right? And that's the type of scenario.
You know, his parents are still on a plane from Australia. Overwhelmed. Right.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. But I just, my first thought was like, you're not caring for me. Like, you're 25 years old. Like, you need to go and live your life. Like, you're not.
Yeah.
Like, I just, at that point, I felt like I was a vegetable. And
so at that point, I guess I just, I don't know the whole story. So were you able to use your, because obviously now you can use your upper body.
Mm-hmm.
Were you able to use it then or no?
Not right away.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he still like presents.
Yeah. So I present like I have full function, I guess, but like I can't, like my left hand, I'm very thankful to have gotten to the point where I'm at, but like my left hand is, I don't have full, like I wouldn't be able to open a bottle probably with my left hand.
Okay.
And no core
stability. My triceps took probably at least 4 months to have function.
Triceps?
Yeah.
Wow.
So they were
You're looking good now, though. You're jacked, man. Those shoulders and biceps. I was here putting the work.
Not in that belt squat.
Hey, you can use that belt squat for some curls, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You can use that thing so I have the Rogue one now. And it just takes up less space, and I use it for everything.
For rows and stuff. Yeah.
And everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So early on, I'm considered a quadriplegic still, but have obviously improved my upper body a lot.
You wouldn't even recognize in like hospital photos. Like,
it
was so much skinnier.
It probably took a good year to get to a point. I mean, I fought everything from depression to all of that. And it took a good year, or even more than at least a year to the point where I was like comfortable looking at myself in the mirror, going places, doing things. You know?
Right. Yes. Yeah, so, I mean.
And to even get independent, that was the biggest thing. I mean, it took a while.
And so the road to recovery, like what, like, do you still go and deal with like PTs or specialists, I'm guessing?
So I, up until this whole COVID thing, I would do therapy at home, like specific to my injury, a few times a week. I did it 6 days a week for 2 years straight.
Plus additional home sessions.
Of course.
All of us,
That was, I guess, to go back early on, it was like, for me, the only way I seen out of it was to walk again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I didn't walk, I was useless, essentially. Like, I just didn't see any other life outside of that. And all the things, when I went to rehab in Colorado after 2 weeks in hospital, I thought I was going there to, like, learn to walk.
Right.
And then when I got there, it was like, okay, you're a Asia B incomplete, which basically means like you have no function below your level of injury.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of sensation, but no function. So basically the job is to teach you how to live in a wheelchair.
Right.
And I fought that for a long time. Like, no, I don't want to be in a wheelchair. You know, I don't want to get wheeled into the back of that van, and I don't want to use this modality to put my shoe on and, you know, have special knives and forks and all this stuff that was kind of being shown to us. And to the point where I just felt like, I got to a point where I felt I'm just like this object now, and it's everyone's job around me to keep me alive. And I felt like the only way to avoid all that was to walk. Like, if I walked, then I didn't have to worry about learning to transfer.
Right.
If I walked, I didn't have to worry about learning to get dressed laying down. And
he would not go. There was a class, it was like wheelchair function class, and he wouldn't go. Like, we would try so hard. We're like, you need to go learn how to open doors. Not, don't feel good, not going. Play hooky. Oh, yeah. He avoided it.
It was a weird, because they had all these like machines and with like electric stim and like walking machines and stuff. And I just wanted to be on them. Like, I thought, like, that's what I need to be learning to do. But I wasn't allowed to because of my medical
diagnosis, I guess. Yeah, it's all, like, everyone there is at a different level. And it's, like, there's always somebody worse, some better, somebody, you know, like, in different positions. And it's pretty hard probably to swallow that and look at that.
So, so we were in hospital there for 4 months, 3 months. And when we left, so when I first went there, I was like, yeah, this is great. We're going to learn to walk. And, like, this is, I'm going there to, you know, I can train, I can be dedicated, like, I can fix myself if they give me the tools.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't really that. And then it was, like, desperate to get out of there, but at the same time I was terrified to come home, because it was, like, there was this life at home that we'd built for ourselves that it wasn't going to be the same. You know, like, we lived in a two-story house. We, at that point, I couldn't even get myself into bed. You know, they were, people were lifting me into bed. I couldn't get in my shower. People were lifting me into the shower, helping me put my shoes on, dress myself. It was just awful. So when we got home, it was like I just buried my head in the sand and was just rehab. Like, my brother had flown over to live with us and help with his family, so Elise could kind of, you know, have her break a bit and do some training and racing still. And I just buried my head in the sand and just did therapy 2 times a day, and when I wasn't doing therapy, I'd lay in bed and visualize and try to make a toe move, give me some sign that, like, these legs are going to walk again and there might be a chance, you know?
Yeah.
That was what I felt was my only way out at that point. And so then it was probably about 9 months in. I'm a big NASCAR fan. There was a NASCAR race in Fontana, and my brother was with us at the time, and I hadn't left the house at that point other than like a doctor's appointment. And he was like, I was skinny. I'm pretty white, but I was really white.
Yeah.
And he was like, you need to get out the house. Like, there's life to live. Like, you can keep chasing this goal, but like, there's life to live. You know, he was really good about, you know, he had a friend at home that had a back injury, and he was always showing me photos, like, look at him, like, he's living, like, you can still be what you want to be. Or be, I guess he taught me to just respect myself again, because I had no respect for myself at that point. Just talked down on myself, didn't like who I seen in the mirror, didn't like what I was, wouldn't go to dinner. I was embarrassed to be out with Elise, because I felt like everyone just looked at us like, oh, why is she with him? And like, just real shallow kind of thoughts. But I just didn't have any confidence in myself. And it was a fast change from like alpha athlete that thinks my shit don't stink to like, to that. And, so anyway, that NASCAR race was on and my brother was like, we're going. I was like, I'm not going there. Like, no way. Crowd of people, like, no. And so anyway, he basically threw me in the car and literally drove up to Fontana, and a friend of ours that's in the industry, he got some tickets and organized this like big VIP.
Sorry. Hey, I need you. Stop. Fortnite's important.
So he organized this big like meet and greet, like with all the stars, you know, Jimmy Johnson, Richard Petty, all this stuff, and which I was pretty insecure about, because I didn't, people, it would introduce me as like, oh, this is Sam, he's an Olympic silver medalist in BMX. And I could tell they're looking at me like, how does that work?
What am I missing?
Yeah. So we did the whole, that whole thing. And then the guy that got us the tickets, he's like, at 10 o'clock, you need to go to this hole, a number 13 hauler, and meet this guy. His name's Booty Barker. And he's the crew chief for the number 13 car. And he said, he's in a wheelchair and I need you to meet him. I've known him for 30 years. He's a great guy. And at that point, I was like, I didn't want to meet anyone in a wheelchair, because I was like, that's not what I want to be. Like, they don't have anything, as shallow as it sounds, like, they don't have anything to tell me. Like, I don't want that to be me.
Right.
So anyway, we did it out of respect. We went to the 13 hauler to meet Booty.
Yeah.
And here's this guy, he comes rolling out the back of the trailer, like Southern guy. And he's, you know, pretty well built in the chair. And he's like, hey, Sam, how you going? Like, just life of the party, super bubbly, like, great guy. And he's like, come up here. So Matt pushes me up in the back of his hauler, and he's like climbing the walls, like pulling down exhaust manifolds, showing us all the stuff, pulling up engine data, just like talking to us about everything. And then he just stopped and he's like, so how long you been injured for? And I was like 8 months. And he's like, you look great, brother. What are you going to do now? And I was like,
hell yeah.
I didn't know how to answer that, because right. I didn't know what I was going to do now. And my brother was like, oh, well, you know, Sam, he really wants to walk at his wedding at the end of the year, so he's working hard on rehab, like he wants to walk again. And Booty's like, that's great, then what? And I didn't know how to answer that either. And we all kind of just froze, like my brother, our friend that was with us, we just froze. And my brother was like, so when did you, like, stop rehab and just kind of like, you know, move on? And he's like, rehab? I ain't do no rehab. He's like, they said you can dress yourself, you can leave the hospital. He's like, I did that in 4 weeks, got the hell out of there, got an engineering degree, and here I am. He's like, you got to get on with it, brother. Yeah. And to that point, I hadn't had anyone that, like, it was just doctors and that kind of thing at that point, and it was all like, you know, you're going to need a modality for this. Traveling's going to be really hard. Like, everything had, like, rules and regulations of how...
Limits
of how, like, life was going to work now.
Right.
And then meeting him, it was like, how do you do all this? Like, and he's like, you got to get strong, brother. He's like, you're looking a little weak. You do pull-ups? Yeah. Like, no. Yeah. And he asked me, do I go to the gym? And I was like, well, I used to love the gym, but no. Not now. And he's like, you gotta get in the gym, brother. You need to get strong again. You know, you're gonna have to pull yourself up, throw yourself around again. And he's telling us how he just, when he travels, he stays in a normal hotel. He's like, I get my ass in the bathtub. He's like, here's the deal. You can do whatever you want. You know, he's like, I got a bed. It's high as shit. I fight it every day to get in that thing. But he's like,
it seems like such a thing. Yeah, it's yeah. So funny.
It's like hilarious. He just did everything opposite. Like, yeah. And he was like, he had an F-350 truck, and he just pulls himself in there, and it was just like
climbs up. Probably.
Everything was possible to him.
Yeah. And
he was strong as shit. He's telling me he benches like 315, and he was the exact same injury as me.
Oh wow!
Like 30 years prior.
Yeah.
And he looked at my brother and he said, here's the deal. Him and I are the same as you. We're just going to have to drag ourselves around a little more. And I left there that day and it changed everything for me.
Yeah.
And it seems like simple looking back, but it just, we left there. We went back to the hotel that night because we stayed up in Fontana, and me and Matt were just so motivated. We're like, let's try to get you in the bathtub. Let's right. try and like learn to do all this stuff. Like, and I was motivated to become independent. I was motivated to just become the best version of myself after that. Yeah. And I started to respect myself. I'd seen someone that was doing it, that, you know, he was married, he lived by himself. The more he talked, like, I didn't even see the wheelchair in the end. It was just like, I just seen this successful guy.
And right.
So I left there that day pretty motivated to still work at the ultimate goal of, like, I wanted to stand at our wedding. And as that was something that Elise and I had talked about from day one. And
something that you wanted to do. For, yeah. Like, just what you pictured, you know? It's his day. Sure. It's what he always pictured. And he just not wanted to fall through on a promise. He just wanted to stick to it. And,
yeah.
But I'd say you definitely at that point just regained a lot of, like you said, respect for himself. But, like, all those things that made him a great athlete, he's, like, found a new outlet of how he can reapply those things.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so when we left that day, it was like that was the new mission to become independent again. And I was motivated to become independent again. Like, and I had to start pretty small, like brushing my teeth and, you know, getting up in the morning and trying to dress myself. And, like, the first time I dressed myself, it took 35 minutes. And when I was done, I just went back to sleep. I was exhausted.
Winning! You know what I mean? Like, fuck yeah, that's right. That's awesome. I mean, like, to think about it, just overcoming that, I had to feel so good.
And that's it's the weirdest thing, because it felt, and I still do things now that, like, it's such a weird injury, because I lived that life of, like, pushing my body to limits of that it shouldn't really go to. And just everything, like, the simplest things were just so easy.
Right.
To then, in the blink of an eye, like, tying my shoelace again was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and I was so pumped the first time, like, that I was able to tie it. And then just things like reaching in, like, you get yourself into the pantry and, like, you're able to scoot to the edge of your chair and get something down from a high shelf. And it's like, fuck yeah, I did that. Like,
it's true.
And it's the weirdest thing to, like, go back on things that you just never thought twice about, that now, and it's hard to tell people, like, when it was happening, like, when I was learning to live again.
Yeah.
Like, the time I got dressed, I remember coming down and I was like, 20, like, I took a shower and got dressed and it was like a record. I did it in 20 minutes. I remember coming down and I was like, dude, in 20 minutes. And everyone was like, that's awesome, Sam. Like, they're obviously, like, happy, but, like, I could tell their excitement wasn't the same as mine.
Well, it's hard to, exactly. It's perspective, right? Mm-hmm. We all take things for granted.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, now you're just gaining this perspective of how these little small things that we take for granted are huge.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, I remember, like, this is obviously such a different comparison to what you're talking about, but, like, after I had to get a second knee surgery a year and a half ago. And I literally hadn't been able to run for a year and a half or a year or something like that. And I remember, like, literally the first time I got to go run on the, I started crying.
Yeah.
I was like, this is crazy, you know? And I mean, it's just
movement is a powerful thing. Right,
exactly. Yeah. You know, like,
freedom.
When you feel like something's not there, something, you get taken away, which you're talking about, even just like putting your clothes on and taking a shower and tying your shoes. Like, when you get it back, you know, you just get this little touch of it. It's like, you're like, I'm going to cherish this forever.
Like, when I was able to get to the point where I could get in my car and transfer in my car myself, pull my wheelchair across myself and drive independently, it was like, unbelievable. Like, the freedom. I didn't drive a car for 18 months.
Yeah.
And
now he's back to waiting on me to get ready. So he's gonna
hurry up. You never know what she's doing back there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
oh man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And one that got me was, think about when you pump gas in your car.
Right.
That one got me. Like,
yeah.
If you're not in the right, the one time you said
a couple, the first time I went to the gas station, I pulled up and I was like, all right, sweet. So I start unpacking my chair. I unpack every, like, because I have to pull it apart each time. So I pull it up. It was already pulled apart. So I pull it out, build it up, get out, get in the chair, come around. And my chair was too wide to get between the car and the curb. And I was like, back around, pack it up, get back in, go out, reverse, come back, unpack it, go back around.
I can't imagine watching someone watching this.
Yeah. And it was like just those little things you used to just take for granted.
Yeah, like, man. They're just, you know. But
I think sport in a lot of ways gave me the ability to deal with this and be okay with it, because just, I have to think about, like, if we go to a restaurant, I'm like, where's the toilet? Like, can I get to it?
Like, right, yeah. And just is it upstairs, downstairs? Like,
that
right.
organization.
I don't drink too much.
Yeah. Right. And we get on a plane and it's like, all right, 4 hours, like, don't drink.
Yeah, I'm holding this bad boy.
Yeah. So just all those little things that I think in sport, and if you're an athlete, like, you plan and you, you know, you have to be organized and planned and structured, and that's my life now, like, which I'm okay with, because like, that's my personality as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just have to think of everything.
Yeah. And you're dealing with the situation at hand, right?
Yeah.
You've been dealt a set of cards now.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's two ways you could go about it, right? You could feel like, hey, why'd this happen to me? Or, mm-hmm. you know, I'm glad it didn't happen to someone else who couldn't handle it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
that's a quote from Marcus Aurelius, you know.
Yep.
One of my favorite. I remember reading that quote and I was just like, don't ever be sad that something happened to you, but be thankful that it happened to you and not someone who couldn't handle
and
it.
That you can handle it. Yeah, yep, 100%.
You know, so it's such a, you know, awesome thing. It's an awesome thing to watch.
And I'm
see.
One of the lucky ones that does have a wife that stuck by me, and that a family that was there 100%, and friends, and you know, I've gained friends out of it. I've lost some, gained some, you know, that's life. But I was in hospital with kids that didn't have insurance, didn't have a family around them, you know, and it's scary. Like, they didn't have the mindset that I was fortunate enough to get out of sport as well, to deal with the what if,
right?
To deal with the unknown. They didn't have that skill set, and they didn't have anyone around to nurture them through that. And so in that respect, I'm very lucky.
Yeah, man.
And I think that, like, it's just made you him better coach as well. Like, the perspective shift, and like, yes, everything's important, but he can help anyone that he's coaching. Like, you know, it's what you're doing is important. As long as you give 100% to that, it matters. But if you're not all in, it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
And but just the perspective check of, like, it's okay that this didn't go to plan. We can shift this. We can do that. Like, it just, not that things don't matter, but you can shift the focus, adapt. And
of course,
the perspective check's been
yeah.
a big asset, I know, for me. And when he helps coach with me, it's it makes everything, you never know. You're not entitled to anything, he says a lot. And that's very true with everything. You can't feel entitled to anything. You just got to enjoy the process of hoping it works out and just trying, you know?
For sure.
That joy of the process.
The process. That's you know, you always hear people who, like, oh, you know, the people, oh, they, you know, they want to win the gold medals, but it's like, it's not, those moments aren't what it's all about.
No.
You know, it's not. Yeah. It's like, for me, it's always been the process getting to that, that end goal. The end goal's sweet. You know, it tastes good.
Yeah.
But man, like, if you don't love it, if you don't enjoy it, like, it's not going
to
be worth it.
I always say that. Memories. Like, when I think back to world titles or even London Olympics, like, any success I've had, I don't even really remember the race, but I could tell you, like, you know, day for day what the lead up was like. And like, I had this day at training, and then, you know, on the, you know, 5 days, I remember that taper, and I thought I sucked. I didn't think I had it at all. And like, I've got 10 years of diaries of just everything written out. And it's 100%. You remember the process,
man. Yeah. It's all about the process, because the glory lasts so it's such a short thing anyways.
Yeah.
Right? But it's the sport. It's the camaraderie. It's the relationships you build. It's the mental aspects that you get in and out of it, from the highs to the lows, you know?
Yeah.
So I agree completely.
And that's, he says a lot, like, your gold medal, like, you say, I let the gold medal define me for a minute, like, and I got derailed. I was letting that define me, and now you're back to, you know, your injury doesn't define you. The medal doesn't define you, and I think that message to the people he's helping is important. Like, that whatever, for me, hey, we're trying to win a gold medal too, but my life and my athletic career isn't defined by that.
For both of us, like, with what she went through with her mom and then my injury and going through all that so young, it was like, this time around, for these 4 years, it was like, fuck this, let's just chase this thing of this, her chasing a gold medal in Tokyo next year. But like, there's no fear of failure, because it's just like,
right.
we've like yeah. I always say when she goes up there, like, you're battle tested, like, this is fucking nothing.
Like, it's easy.
Different meaning.
It's a little different. It's not. It's the same. I know exactly what you mean, though, yeah. Right?
And it's just a fun win, lose, or draw. Like, it's just a fun journey. Like, the journey that we're going on now, traveling the world together and trying to come up with a plan to ultimately make her better. And it's a fun process. And
Yeah. No, it's the perspective. Now the perspective has shifted, mm-hmm. right? I feel like I got that a lot in my early stages of CrossFit, where people were like, oh, you know, like, how do you, you know, like, when it gets really tough, what do you think about? And I'm like, this isn't tough.
Yeah.
I exercise for a living. Yep. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This isn't hard.
Yeah. 100%.
Like, I mean, this is me getting away from the hard stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
So. I've never known how to answer that question when people are like, oh, you think about what'd you give up, like, as a kid?
Give up?
I don't know.
Sacrifice isn't really the right word. So right. You enjoy it.
Yeah.
That's that's the thing I've always had to tell people too, is like, this isn't a sacrifice.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to go to bars. Yeah. I don't want to get drunk.
Right.
I don't want to feel like crap every day.
Yeah.
I love going into the gym. The only I like feeling like crap because I worked out so hard.
Yeah.
You know, that
yeah,
my body hurts. Yeah. Right. I feel like I did something, but like, I know when people use that word exactly, sacrifice, I'm like, this isn't a fucking sacrifice. Like, are you kidding me? I'm not sacrificing anything. I would rather be here than there.
Yeah.
You know?
No one held a gun to your head.
No, exactly. And like, I didn't sacrifice because I didn't go get drunk and not do anything with my life.
Right.
You know,
and
just party.
Yeah.
You know? No, I agree. That's always a funny line to me too. Is like, oh, the sacrifice. It's like, sure. That's what you want to call it.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, the perspective thing coming full circle. You asked at the start of this whole chat, you know, how do you deal with, you know, the year delay? Well, you know, there's been worse things. Like, you know, everyone's dealt the hand right now, so you just try to play it the best you can.
Right.
And this whole journey has made it feasible, I guess, and more plausible to stay the course
for sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. What couple more minutes, I guess. What like, is there any like what are you doing right now to like help, because you were saying you're, you know, helping other people, so are you coaching other people besides Elise?
Yeah, so I coach Elise, and then Elise's training partner, who's also Australian, who lives here in San Diego, Lauren Reynolds. Coach her, and then one of my childhood friends who I grew up went to Rio Olympics with, I'm coaching him now, Anthony Dean.
Okay.
And another younger guy from Arizona, Cam Wood. Nice. So I got like a group of four.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Which is good, and I just, I like it at the top end, and just trying to win stuff at the moment. That's what really fuels me. Yeah.
Yeah, every and project challenges you different.
Yeah. And they're kind of somewhat hand selected, you know, like, or either friends or like Cam, for example. He's just a young kid, he's 18, and just seen a lot of myself in him at that age.
Yeah. You have a friend introduce us to him.
There's not too many 18-year-olds that I click with in this day and age.
Sorry, kids.
You're right. It is. It's hard. It's hard to find that kind of.
I'm a bit of an old soul, so.
Yeah.
But he's a good kid, and so that's been a fun little project.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on one sec.
Are you kidding me? How many times have I said I don't want you to talk right now? Do I need to have you guys turn that off and go on there? They'd be quiet.
They're not 18 yet.
Don't ask for much. I ask for 1 hour.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, you can be as loud as you want.
Yeah.
Don't care.
No rules.
No rules. There really isn't in this house. And that's awesome. So, So, you're training those people. Anything else going on right now?
So I like still getting in the gym a lot. So, that's been like my passion, just to try to rebuild myself. And it's been a fun process in many ways. Like, the first time I went to the gym, my brother kind of dragged me there after we met Booty at Fontana, and we went to like an Anytime Fitness or something, and he like threw me on the bench, and I couldn't even balance on the bench. Like, I couldn't tell where my proprioception was all gone, so I couldn't feel where my legs were, or like I couldn't even tell like if my hips were in the center. I couldn't feel anything, and I could lift the barbell, but like I couldn't really grip it with my left hand. And then now to which is, what are we, 4 years later, have kind of just...
Well, 3 years.
Since, yeah, since 3 years since going stuff, back to the gym. So it's just been like an ongoing process to try to... I just love exercising and challenging myself and pushing myself.
Before our wedding, you were a medium, and then you said... After that, he tossed all of his medium shirts on the ground in the closet, and he put up a story on his Instagram, like, road to XL. And
I like
he's
it.
Got a couple XLs now to fit the biceps. I don't so he's good.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
It's just been like anything, it's just been an evolving thing. Like,
right.
I went, yeah, just be meathead lifting weights at the start, and then...
It's good times.
He often says, I've got more... I have less working muscles than days in the week, so
it's hard to find what to do sometimes.
Right,
but
yeah,
and then just as I've improved over time, and like I've got to the point now where I can like grip a lat pull down with my right hand, I still have to use an assist on my left.
Okay,
so it just changes over. Yeah, I just keep chipping away at it to try to get to the point of. I don't know what point, really. Just keep working at it. And
never-ending goals.
The process. Yeah.
Right, the process, exactly.
Started doing a bit of cardio again, and so that's been good. Just that was a big... With my injury being so high, like I couldn't get my heart rate above 109.
Okay.
So now I'm at the point where it's pretty normal. Gets up around 200, so that's good. So it's been...
That's up there.
It's just things like, I guess, like... Once I met Booty, like I just stopped putting limits on things. I just try shit now and see.
Yeah,
it doesn't always work right away, and I've dropped some weights on myself, and you know, slipped and done this and that. But yeah, I just try to. I don't really have any end goal in mind. It's just like I'll try that, and see where we can get to. Yeah.
Do you still keep in contact with him,
Booty? Yeah, quite a bit. Yeah.
That's cool. That's awesome, man.
Yeah. And you're still chasing him on the bench press, but
nice. I like it.
Yeah, he often gets asked about doing a para sport or like para weightlifting, but there's not a lot of classes. There's not a lot of need for like you know quadriplegic bench pressing. I don't think that's a big thing. So, but he always says, "I'm the second best. I'm the second best." Quadriplegic weightlifter in the world.
No big deal.
He's number one. Yeah.
Right. That's good. Man, I love it. And you guys are coffee people.
Yes.
So you know another.
That was the first venture.
That was
for
the
him,
first venture.
Okay. Actually, after the.
So it was actually I used the excuse that it was kind of good for my hands at the start because it's like.
Dexterity.
Right. I like so, it. I like where your head's at.
Yeah. So right after I got hurt. Well, when we moved home, we bought a rocket machine and a grinder and everything. And I'd always been in, like, there's a big coffee culture in Australia.
Yeah, sure, it's huge in coffee, yeah.
So I'd always liked coffee, but never really, like, made it and that kind of, or got into that process of it, which is a very deep rabbit hole. Once
you can go deep. You can go deep in the hole now.
Yeah.
Brewing methods. You know.
So we got into that and... Yeah.
Now we have way too much coffee every day, but I'm spoiled. I've got my personal barista
that's
every morning.
That's
and
right.
Now Emily met you, so we got our good dudes at
the
house.
Deal.
We're good.
Yeah. I know. It was the first thing. You guys like coffee? Here you go.
Yeah.
We just caught it on immediately.
Yeah.
You know, you got to sell it. You got to sell it, right?
Exactly.
That's awesome. Well, I'm so glad I got to meet you guys through some weird random offer up purchase. You guys taking the time to come on the show and share your story, man. It's been awesome. It's been awesome to get to know you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you. It's been good.
All right. That's it.